supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Playoff quest tip tonight at 8. Phils broke their skid with a 7-3 win over the Padres last night. Roy Halladay will head to the Hill at 7:05 at the park this evening. You're listening to WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show in our famous Question of the Week segment, we take a look at a very unusual insect, the wireworm, whose underground larval form is a serious garden and agricultural pest, but whose adult form is a source of endless amusement for children who stumble onto them outside. We'll tell you all about it later in the show. But mostly it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking your heaping helping of telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Christy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Christy. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm real good.
And where is Christy fine and or real good?
In Mount Airy, Pennsylvania, outside Philly, in Philly.
Just outside. Well, yeah, I don't know. Is it inside or outside?
We're inside Philly.
Okay, so it's a famed Philadelphia neighborhood.
Yes.
So what can we do for Christy in or from Mount Airy?
Actually, I have a question that's irrelevant to where I live. It concerns populating an office with plants. And this is an office that is interior, has absolutely no natural light, and it's for a depression treatment study, and so I want to make it as friendly and inviting as possible. So I wondered what I could do with plants in here, and the lighting is recessed fluorescent ceiling lights, and it's dark, you know, all weekend.
Now, this may be a tangent. Won't this room affect the results of the study if it's a windowless room with fluorescent light? Aren't people going to be more depressed no matter what the other variables are?
Well, we'll do the best we can. This is imitating real life, though. You know, this is the kind of room that they would have treatment at certain doctor offices. So,
you know, there are a couple of plants that are called shade plants. Philodendron is the most famous of them. These are office plants that get by with just ambient light. You know, generally there's a window around somewhere that at least, you know, the plant can get some psychic emanations from.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, mostly they get by with little light to no light to the lights in the ceiling. So you'd be looking at ivy, philodendron, mother-in-law's tongue, ficus, which is the indoor kind of first cousin of the fig tree.
Mm-hmm.
But if they would give you any kind of emotional uplift, it would be the smallest possible.
Mm.
Could we put a shelf in this room?
What would we do with the shelf?
We would bracket the shelf, and we would hang a 4-foot-long fluorescent fixture over top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just fitted with 2 4-foot-long tubes, one cool white, one warm white. Now, this whole setup, this fixture,
mm-hmm.
with the bulbs, is well under $20.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
What would it look like, though? Would it be attractive?
Well, what you would do is you would shop for, quote, shop lights that looked half decent. They all look different.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're artsy crafty, you could go out and get your Pactra enamel, and you could paint the hood a nice color, or you could draw vines on it.
I'm not artsy crafty.
Something like that. Well, there's people like that in the world. Find one.
Right.
But anyway, you would kind of angle it away from the eyes of the people, and then on this shelf, under this 4 feet of light, it could be a 6-foot shelf because there's going to be spillover light.
Mm-hmm.
The things that I'm talking about are going to be no-brainers.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the plants that are available now in garden centers, really cheap, that people are buying for their shade gardens outside, that flower in the lowest possible light. And indoors, they are a knockout.
What plants?
Begonias and impatiens. What most people don't understand, and a trick I like to tell people every fall, is impatiens and annual begonias, so-called annual begonias, are perennial too, as long as you bring them indoors.
Mm.
And begonias, you can get these amazing copper-colored leaves and kind of goldenish leaves. The leaf structure is very pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just green leaves. They flower like crazy.
Really?
Yes, the impatiens, the leaf structure isn't as interesting, but impatiens also, both of them have a tendency to also trail if they like their conditions.
Oh, which would be great.
Although I tell you, if you were to drop a couple of wandering Jews, those vining plants
mm-hmm.
that have those, you know, amazing purple leaves.
Right, I forgot about those.
In between, those are another, you don't see them as much as you used to. You don't see them as much as you see spider plants. They trail down. They're one of the best air cleaning plants, natural air cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to go for the gold, drop a couple of African violets in there.
Oh, I like those.
They love that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you could do this whole project for like $50 plants included.
Wow, that's terrific.
Because again, the shop light, the important thing is to make sure it's 4 foot long and 40 watt bulbs, not plant lights. First
okay.
of all, plant lights give off that green light that I find horrifyingly depressing.
Okay, I've never
and
seen that.
And the plants really want lumens.
Uh-huh.
So when you get 40 watt fluorescents and you mix one cool and one warm, you get a lot of color structure, the thing that people are going on for plant lights.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, much, much brighter light, much more lumens, low energy cost because it's fluorescent,
mm-hmm.
no heat of any kind, really, because it's fluorescent.
Mm-hmm.
And impatiens and begonias are available as bedding plants right now in
yeah.
garden centers.
Mm-hmm.
African violets are always available. And there still have to be some old hippies from the 60s and 70s who've had the same wandering Jew plant in
mm-hmm.
the house for like 100 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, those things, you root them in water. As soon as the roots appear, you put them in a pot full of soil and they'll grow forever.
Okay. Wow.
All right.
If it turns out well, I'll send you a picture.
I want to see it.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Christy.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Kelly, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, Kelly. How are you?
I'm doing just fine down here in North Carolina.
Excellent. What can we do you for?
Well, I have these a cedar tree. It's a skyrocket cedar I bought from a major home improvement center, and it's been growing in my yard pretty good for the past 3 years. And I've noticed these orange globular things growing on the stems of some of the branches. And when it gets wet, like rains at night, they get these long rubbery tentacles. They look sort of like something from a science fiction movie or something.
Aren't
they? I've looked them up, and I guess they're called cedar galls.
Well, you're close. You're close. You didn't, when you looked them up, you weren't taken to a website that talked about cedar apple rust?
Yes, I was taken there also.
Okay, because that's what you have.
Right.
Those orange lanterns are famous for cedar apple rust. And are there apple trees nearby that you know of?
Yes, I have about 3 apple trees in my property also.
Well, you're a bad boy, Kelly.
Oh.
This is all your fault.
Oh, this don't is, say that.
It is. It's totally. Remember, like in the first Ghostbusters movie when Bill Murray is talking about the biblical times to come? You have cats and dogs living together.
Oh, gracious. Well, I was hoping there'd be some remedy as opposed to getting rid of the host. Because I do like the cedar tree also, but
there really is none that I know of. Now, we did a question of the week on it. If you go to our website,
right,
go to youbetyourgarden.org,
right,
and go to Garden Answers A to Z, and I think either look under C or A, we have a whole article on cedar apple rust. Rust is a disease that can attack many plants. Roses can get rust. Apple trees are notorious for it. And it's just like it sounds. It's almost like if you scraped rust off an old iron tool,
mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it would look like. And it gets all over the trees. It gets all over the fruit and all over the leaves. So how young are your apple trees?
I'd say 2 years old.
Okay, so that's perfectly normal that you haven't gotten any fruit yet. This is a very bizarre disease. It travels back and forth between these two varieties, between anything in the cedar family and anything in the apple family. And
that's interesting.
With the cedars, they just get these weird growths on them that don't seem to affect the health of the tree. But then, sooner or later, it goes back to the apple as rust. And it makes it not only makes the trees unattractive, it can ruin the apples. Now, you say these apple trees have only been in the ground a couple of years, right?
Correct.
There's three of them.
Three of them.
And how long have you had the cedar?
About the same amount of time.
Well, it's like the old song, you're going to have to make up your mind.
I think what I'm going to end up doing is getting rid of the cedar tree.
And there's other evergreens you can bring in. As long as they're not in the cedar or juniper family, this won't happen. It is one of the weirdest relationships in horticulture.
All right, Mike. Well, I appreciate your information, and I'll keep listening to your show.
All right. Thank you, Kelly.
All right. Thanks.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind our Philadelphia area listeners that I'll do double duty next Saturday, May 19th. Talking about tomatoes at the Greensgrove Farm in the heart of Philadelphia at 1 o'clock and hosting a fundraiser for the Food for All folks you heard about on last week's show at 6:30 at the Senior Center in Phoenixville. But don't go looking for all the details at the events and appearances section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and the curious story behind the plant-attacking wireworm. I'm Wiry Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Wormy Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Burpee. Burpee offers seeds and live plants, edibles, flowers and perennials, treasured heirlooms, and high-performing hybrids. More information online at burpee.com.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
The Stockton Center on Successful Aging at the Stockton College of New Jersey supports WHYY and celebrates Older Americans Month on May 15th with its Festival on Successful Aging, featuring WHYY's Dr. Dan Gottlieb, Mike McGrath, and Wider Horizons' Willow Carey. With over 25 workshops, tours, performances, exhibitors, and an organic plant sale, the event runs from 9 to 4 and is open to the public. More information at stockton.edu or 609-652-4311.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and is hosting an open house at their historic Ford Hook Farm headquarters in Warminster, PA on Friday and Saturday, May 11th and 12th. More information at burpee.com.
We've got sunny skies in Center City, 71 degrees, on our way to a high of 81.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, there is a curious soil-dwelling pest, unknown to many gardeners, that attacks roots, tubers, corms, seedlings, does a lot of damage, lives in the soil for a long time, but then turns into a really cool adult insect. We'll tell you all about the wireworm later in the show. In the meantime, lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Tina, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Tina. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
I am doing just fine, thank you. And where is Tina Good?
Tina's good in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania.
All right, very good. What can we do for Tina?
Tina's got a yard that she purchased a house, and she's got around the yard old Christmas trees that the past owners planted around the perimeter of the yard.
Oh, and do you know for a fact that they did that? They bought bald and burlap trees every year and then planted them outside?
Yes.
That's excellent. That's excellent. And they're happy and healthy?
No.
Oh.
I don't want to lose the trees, but it looks like they have, and it started with one in the back corner, it looks like they have bagworm.
Oh, man. Now, I hope you're wrong, but rather than me tell you what bagworms look like, I'm going to have you describe the symptoms.
the needles fall off. There's like little brown, almost sacks, and I've seen one tree pretty much decimated by it, and now two in the back look like they have more of it going up the side, and two in the front corner of the property have it growing from the bottom and moving up.
All right. Well, unfortunately, you've identified your pest correctly. As you can see, it would not be unusual for a human to look at a tree covered with bagworm nests and think that the tree had just produced pine cones. These bags that the insects live in really camouflage well into the tree, and they only do this on evergreens, and a lot of times the infestation has long ago become severe by the time people realize these aren't pine cones and my tree is dead. Now, do you still have healthy, unaffected trees?
Yes, there's about 15 of them, so there's a few that are healthy. I just want to understand how I can stop it from progressing on the other trees, and then what can I do for the trees that only have smaller sections, I guess you would say.
Right. The first thing is, now you know what these bags look like, you need to visually inspect these trees on a regular basis to make sure the clean ones are not getting bagged. You know, one of the things that may have happened is when these people started this, they may have been planting the trees incorrectly. They may have been planting them too deeply. They may have been planting them with the burlap still wrapped around the root system. Or they may have had the tree inside for a long time and then took it outside into cold weather. Those are the three biggest losses of, quote, live Christmas trees. And a weakened tree is always going to attract these pests. If you can, as much as you can, depending on the height of the trees, get a pair of pruners or loppers and physically remove the bags. Even if you have to cut off branch tips, whatever you have to do, get the bags off. You want to physically remove as many bags as you can. And you can get pruners that go pretty high up into trees while you stay on the ground. Because not only do these creatures eat the needles, but those bags are like Spider-Man's webbing. The silk or whatever they use to attach the bag to the tree is stronger than steel. And as the tree grows, it girdles that limb and actually kills it two different ways. These are really nasty pests. The other thing you want to do is have your trees sprayed regularly with BT, the old original form of BT. This is sold under brand names like Dipel, Thoracide. This is one of the oldest organic insecticides. You spray it on a plant. It only harms caterpillars who then eat the sprayed leaves. A bird could fly in while you were spraying. The bird would be unharmed. A caterpillar could fall off the tree in its death throes from BT and be eaten by a toad. The toad would have nothing other than a good meal. There's no harm to you or anything else in the environment. And one thing I also want you to do is get in touch with your local county extension office in Pennsylvania and see what their best estimate is as to the emergence and feeding time of the caterpillars, because that's when you really want to spray the trees heavily, and then you can literally end this cycle. You can knock out this generation completely and end the problem for a while. And very important, no wood mulch, no bark mulch, no root mulch around these trees, and no chemical feedings of any kind, no tree spikes. It would be even good if they weren't growing near a lawn that was chemically fed or chemically treated.
Okay, perfect.
All right, they are a tough pest. They are notorious for this. You've done nothing wrong, and you will be able to stop them now because you have chosen to pay attention.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, good luck. 1-888-346-9499. Molly, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike.
Hey,
thank
Molly.
You.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I am just fine, thank you. And where is Molly doing well?
In Nashville.
Nashville, Tennessee. Of course, I've never spoken to an unhappy person in Nashville. I don't know how they write all those sad songs.
Yeah, you never hear anything bad about Nashville.
No, it's a great place. I'm looking to get back there. I had a great time when I was out there years ago.
Okay.
All right, what can we do for Molly in Nashville?
Well, I last year planted a Himalayan musk rose in my garden here. I had had the same plant in my two previous houses, and it did beautifully. The first time was in Portland, Oregon, and the second time was in Memphis. I've bought these bare root plants from a different nursery each time. The one in Memphis really did the best, and it just climbed all over the place. It was beautiful, you know, various shades of deep rose to medium pink to pale pink. It was really gorgeous, both in form and color. But the one here, it looks good from a distance, but up close, it's just these uninteresting little popcorn blossoms, and they're all a fairly uniform shade of pink.
So, now you grew this rose in Portland, you said.
Right, and there it climbed up a tree of heaven, but it still mounded, you know, all over the place. It was gorgeous.
Okay, so it did good in Portland and in Memphis. So this
right.
is clearly a plant that likes you in general. Now, has the sun situation been the same?
Yes. I mean, except that the tree shaded the one. The first two were both under a tree, and this one is not.
So, it you know, in one sense, it's being blasted. How many years has it been in the ground?
Just a year.
Just a year. And when did you put it into the ground, this new one?
I can't remember, honestly.
You can't remember for sure. But you ordered it. You mail ordered it.
All three of them were mail ordered, yeah.
But always from different companies.
Well, the one that I in Memphis was from this funny little family nursery in South Carolina, and they had a, you know, one of those real personality websites, but mm-hmm. then they went out of business.
Oh, so you couldn't go back there.
Right.
That's interesting. Now, is the rose still in Memphis?
Yes.
Okay, because we may want to go back and take some cuttings from
oh,
there.
Oh, great.
There are several things that could be happening here. One, it's interesting that the others got some afternoon shade or got some partial shade during the day. I find my roses, even though they're supposed to be full sun plants and everything like that, mm-hmm. my roses bloom the best and have the best color, interestingly enough, when they are technically a little too crowded by other plants, mm-hmm. in what the book would say.
Mm-hmm.
The other possibility is that you really were never getting the exact same plant. Himalayan musk rose is kind of a category. And these are plants that are fairly close to the wild. They're not overbred.
Right.
So there could be some normal differences between them. The third possibility, and this happened, I had to disappoint a church. I mean, there was a saint in this church. This was a church laden with relics. And the roses planted outside, the famous roses, changed color. But I went and investigated, took a look, and it was clear that either a severe winter or a hack pruning job or over mulching had destroyed the graft. These were grafted roses. There was a very hardy rootstock, and then there was an obvious place where the plants were joined, and then on top of this rootstock was grafted the flowering portion of a different rose.
Huh.
So if the grafting was done poorly, if you accidentally buried it, if it
right.
had severe conditions, that you might not have the rose you bought. You might have the rose that grew out of the rootstock instead.
Huh.
Do you feed it or mulch it or anything?
I've fed it once, and I probably fed it a little too much at one time. And it's blooming like crazy. It's just the color and the, you know, the shape of the blooms that...
Yeah, and see, the thing is, you say the blooms are different shape than the first two plants.
Yeah, they're just little sort of popcorn roses. They're
I think
not.
That to me sounds like the rootstock has taken
yeah.
over.
Okay.
So what I would suggest Next time you visit Memphis, go back to your old place. This would actually be good to do soon while the new growth is coming out. And either ask permission or in the middle of the night, you know, take some cuttings from your old rows and then bring them home and root them first in pots to make sure you get good take on the cuttings. But I will tell you that roses are one of the two easiest plants to propagate. And if you go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org and go to the Garden Answers A to Z, look under R for rooting roses. There's instructions that we have for people who root roses from bouquets, from cut roses.
Wow.
That's how much these plants love to root, so you should not have any problem. If you don't want to do that, I would go back to your first source and buy new plants. Because I don't think anything you do is going to change the color of these roses.
Right. Okay, well, that's great to know, and I'm going to go cut some off the Memphis bush.
I think that's the best idea. I think, you know, Memphis to Nashville, that's a treasured route. I mean, you know, there you would be far from the 1 millionth person to go from Memphis to Nashville and back again.
Well, great. Thank you so much.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Bye. 1-888-346-9499. Fran, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well, Fran. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you.
And where is Fran good?
I'm good in the Mount Airy section of Philadelphia.
I know it well. What can we do for Fran in Mount Airy?
Well, I had called about pressurized lumber. I'm building some raised beds for my vegetable garden, and the cheapest available material seemed to be pressurized wooden decking.
And do you always go the cheapest way, Fran? Do you buy the 89-cent pound ground beef at the supermarket and the suspicious on-sale chicken?
No, I don't.
Generally, things are cheap for a reason. I think years ago, some genius invented the term pressure treated, because it doesn't give you this mental image of wood being somehow subjected to some futuristic treatment that makes it like as strong as stone. It's under pressure. It's like Superman coming from Krypton and being on our planet where he's dense and invulnerable. It's almost like the wood has become fossilized, when in reality, all they're doing is injecting chemicals into the wood under intense pressure.
Now, right. I'm aware of that. I know that they stopped using arsenic, but I didn't know whether the current chemicals were in any way safe for a vegetable garden.
I don't know exactly what they're using, but I try to avoid the low end in life. If you're going to be growing a vegetable bed, why would you start out with something suspicious? I mean, are you going to be an organic gardener? Be honest with me.
Yeah, I made the right choice. I didn't get it. I bought regular lumber.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. And, so this is a did I do the right thing call?
Yes, at this point, this is did I do the right thing.
So what kind of wood did you buy?
I bought the standard, I guess it's a hemlock, rather than the cedar, which would last a lot longer, but is more expensive.
You know, what you're going to find is if your soil is not remarkably acidic, and if you keep the moisture levels normal, just regular untreated wood, in my experience, can last 5 to 8 years.
Well, that was my experience as well, and I think I got at least 5 years out of most of what I had put in before. So
I will tell you what I think is the smart way. It might be the most expensive way to go, but I think the modern way is moving towards pavers. You know, it's almost like having a raised bed made out of Legos. If you decide you want to make it a little thinner, you can just rearrange it the following year. You want to make it longer, you can rearrange it. Were I starting out now, I think I'd be using a lot more pavers. But most of my raised beds are made of field stone, which was already in the area. You know, I could either haul the stone out and haul some stuff in, and I got smart for a change and just turned the field stone on its side. But I'm glad you made the right choice, Fran. I think you'll be very happy. I think the hemlock is a really interesting choice of wood. And I know you'll enjoy your raised beds. Are they built already?
It's a work in progress. I still have a little bit to finish.
Okay. Just remember, make sure that they're no wider than 4 feet so you don't ever have to step into that beautiful soil.
Well, I've already made that mistake.
How wide did you make them?
They're about 5.5 feet.
Oh, you better have long. You better have an orangutan come to do your weeding for you.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, good luck, Fran. Thank you for avoiding pressure-treated wood.
Well, thank you very much. Enjoy your show very much and listen almost always and get lots of good advice. So.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. You have a good season.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind all the hopeful tomato planters out there that determinate varieties are the best types for containers in small spaces, while the vines of the bigger, less well-behaved indeterminate types, which produce the big beefsteaks and treasured heirloom varieties, can grow 10 to 14 feet in a single season and require serious room and structural support. But don't go looking for all the details under T in the Garden Answers A to Z section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and the straight story behind the crooked pest known as the wireworm. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Burpee. Burpee has been providing gardeners with seeds, plants, and supplies for growing everything from tomatoes to flowers to gourmet herbs for over a century. More information online at burpee.com.
There's more of Mike and You Bet Your Garden in just a moment on WHYY.
Jenkins Arboretum proudly supports WHYY. Spring is in full bloom at Jenkins Arboretum and Gardens, a 48-acre public garden located in Devon. Jenkins is open to the public at no charge every day from 8 a.m. to sunset, with paths to walk and explore on your own or with your family. Enjoy rhododendrons, azaleas, flowering dogwoods, and other native plants and wildflowers. Details online at jenkinsarboretum.org.
The Junior League of Greater Princeton supports WHYY and presents its biennial springtime event, the Designer's Showhouse and Gardens, located at 124 Edgerstone Road, Princeton, New Jersey. Called Priory Court, this year's home consists of nearly 30 design spaces and grounds that have been created by interior designers and landscape architects to portray a place of beauty and style. Closing May 20th, tickets and more information at jlgp.org.
The Splendid Table comes your way at noon today here on WHYY, and then at 1, it's Fresh Air Weekend. Lena Dunham will talk about her new HBO series, Girls. Dunham created the show and plays an aspiring writer making the transition from college student to independent adult. Also, Gretchen Reynolds, who writes the Phys Ed column for the New York Times Well blog, will be there. Reynolds discusses the latest scientific research about exercise and fitness and stretching. Does it work? Join us for Fresh Air Weekend at 1 today here on WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week about a very interesting pest known as the wireworm that attacks underground plant parts and is a true pest. But then it turns into a very interesting beetle that has delighted millions of children who discover them and their unique talent while playing outdoors. We'll tell you all about the wireworm and the click beetle after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Marie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing very well. Marie, how are you today?
I'm great.
And where are you great?
I'm in Mount Laurel over in Jersey.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Marie in Mount Laurel in the Garden State?
I live in an area where we have a lot of trees, and they're tall oak trees. And next to one of the trees is my rhododendron bush. Well, the squirrels come down the bush or the tree, and they jump on my bush, and they eat the buds.
You know why?
No.
Squirrels are evil. It takes a squirrel about 67 seconds a day to attend to all its animal needs, you know, get all its food and water, and it spends the rest of the day thinking of ways to make us miserable.
Right,
squirrels
right.
are evil.
Is there anything that I can spray on the plant to keep these critters off of it?
Yes, but first I have to ask you, is anybody, including you, in the neighborhood feeding the squirrels?
Yes, there are a lot of people who do feed the squirrels in the area.
All these people have to be taken away and gotten out of the neighborhood, because this is one of the main reasons squirrels get even more disruptive than they normally are.
Okay.
When humans feed squirrels, it gives them even more time because they don't have to, like, look for food in the natural world.
Okay.
But this is also generally behind the behavior when squirrels dig up garden beds, because they're hiding the excess food, even though they know they won't need it later, they won't find it later. But squirrel problems are worst where people feed them. I mean, if any of my neighbors put up a squirrel feeder, at the very least, I would go out with a chainsaw in the middle of the night and keep cutting them down until these people, like,
okay.
caught on. But I will tell you, as long as you have squirrel lovers in your neighborhood, this problem is going to be maximized.
Okay.
So your choices in terms, there's no difference, essentially, what we're doing here than if deer were eating your rhododendron. And
okay.
rhododendron is a favorite plant of deer, just like other plants in the azalea family, or the reverse. Azaleas, rhododendrons are in the same family. Deer like them both. A deer repellent sprayed on the plant will repel squirrels as well, because these things are taste deterrents. When they bite into a bud, instead of it being a tasty flower bud, they will get, and I want you to look for a specific type of deer repellent.
Okay.
Whose active ingredient is putrescent egg solids. Real eggs that have gone bad that then get sent to a processing house to be turned into deer repellent.
Okay.
And it does smell a little bad when you're spraying it, but this, when it dries, we don't smell it.
Okay.
But then it becomes a taste deterrent. And you want, quite simply, the deer repellent with the highest concentration of that active ingredient. It will actually say putrescent egg solids as the active ingredient. And you want to look for one where that's like a good 4-5% of the total. That would be a high concentration.
Okay. Now, will this hurt birds? Or
no.
Because I have a lot of birds that come into the area.
The nice thing about animal repellents, at least the ones that are made from putrescent egg solids or from hot peppers, is you're spraying them on, and any creature that then bites into the sprayed plant will get a bad taste in its mouth.
Okay.
You're not spraying any kind of poisons. You're not spraying anything that could harm. Unfortunately, it won't even harm the squirrels.
Okay, that's good. Okay. You have an excellent show. I listen to your show every week if I get a chance to, and it's just great.
Well, thank you, and I got to tell you, Marie, you got to man up against these squirrels.
I will.
All right, take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Brad, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yeah, hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for being had. Brad, where are you, man?
We're kind of in that little point of Berks County.
Okay. Brad is in Pennsylvania, maybe 50 miles north of Philadelphia. What can we do for Brad?
Okay, remember the famous Halloween snowstorm?
Oh, yes, yes. I lost quite a few plants from that.
We won't talk. We had like $12,000 damage. But anyway, we had an old, and by old I mean it was big when we got here, red maple tree on the other side of the pool. A hickory tree back in the woods came down, and among other things, sheared off half the red maple tree and broke off the top, hit the pool, hit the house, did a lot of damage. Now, when the tree surgeons came to cut the hickory up, they kind of cut the red maple back. It's sort of oddly shaped because it's all off to one side now. I'm looking out a second-story window, and I'm at eye level with the top of it. It was originally about twice that tall. The question is, do we try to prune it back into a shape and let it bush back out? Will it do that? Is it a lost cause? Somebody said, well, cut it back to, like, 2 or 3 feet off the ground, and it'll grow back, and I didn't know about that.
Good Lord. This is like a medical show during colonial times, and, you know, well, we've bled this guy every day for 2 weeks. What do you want to do now, Dr. Hamilton? Well, I think we should bleed him some more.
Yeah, right.
You don't think this poor tree has had enough biomass removed one way or another yet?
Yeah, it's had quite a lot taken off.
So I don't think when a tree has had, like, this is like a Monty Python routine. You know, we've hacked off its arms and legs.
Yeah.
You know, well, let's just cut some more off then. No, I don't know why people immediately want to just keep pruning away. Although in this case, it will advance the script to the end of the movie really fast.
Is where it keels over.
Japanese, what, with you guys there, it doesn't sound like it's going to have to keel over. You'll be in line.
It leafed out. It looks really healthy.
Okay, good. Now, look at the tree that you have now in the leaf it's in, as damaged and as perhaps lopsided as it is. Okay, the fact that it's leafed out means there's still, you know, the roots are undamaged, the bark is undamaged, there's enough of a canopy left that you're getting good leaf structure. Can you live with the shape you have now or something that's within 10% of the shape you have now?
Okay, so what you're saying is if I'm going to try shaping it, don't take more than another 10% off?
I wouldn't take anything off this year. This poor thing has This poor thing's been in a prize fight where every time it gets turned around, there's another left hook heading its way. So,
well, you have to understand. I mean, this was for a red maple, it was tall. It was probably, I don't know, maybe 35 feet to the top, but the hickory was about 60 feet.
Right, so it was...
So it wasn't a fair fight.
It wasn't a fair fight. And the thing you do now is not punch the little guy again.
Yeah.
So what you're saying
is basically I should just leave it alone.
So your tree sounds like it lost a lot of itself, but it's still alive. It's still healthy. This is a recovery year. It needs every one of those leaves. Think of those leaves as solar panels that are going to convert sugars and carbohydrates, you know, feed the plant. Let the plant relax, because when it lost most of its structure was the worst time of year for a plant because it was just starting to go dormant. And then the pruning was also done at a time that could only limit the strength of the plant. Now, luckily, you had a fairly warm winter that didn't stress the tree further. I would not take another single thing off this tree unless you see a dead or severely damaged branch. Let it leaf out next year again, and then you can begin gentle pruning with the expectation that if you prune back to the bark, back to the trunk, that area will not regrow. All right, so are you good with your red maple instructions, sir?
Okay, so basically just don't do anything this year. If it comes through still looking healthy and you want to start gently shaping it next year, that's okay, but don't go all the way back to the trunk.
Oh, yes. Well, you're not going to regenerate limbs. You might get some new growth at the top, depending on what the damage was like at the crown. But the fact that you're leafed out now is a good sign. If you want to do some gentle pruning, you can do it in the dead of winter, on the worst day of winter, when you don't want to be out there doing pruning. Less is more. Or if you want to wait till it starts to leaf out, then some gentle pruning. But really little bits. Let the tree have several years to really regenerate.
Yeah. And you don't think that the side that got sheared off is really ever going to come back then?
They tend not to, no.
Okay, well, we'll just have a sort of lopsided tree, I guess.
We are what we are, Brad. We hope that people don't look at us too closely most of the time.
Well, yeah, we all lose our looks in the end.
All right, man?
Okay, good enough. Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Take care.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week, which we're calling, it's a bad worm, it's a benign beetle, it's both. Alexis, read us this week's very curious question.
Okay, well, Matt in Fairless Hills, Pennsylvania writes, I'm having problems with some type of worm that bores into the stems of my young seedling plants well below the soil line. I first found them last year when I noticed some tomato seedlings starting to wilt and die, so I pulled them out. When I did, I noticed holes in the stems with the worms inside. The plant stems weren't even 3/8 of an inch in diameter, and this worm was literally inside the stem. They do not fit your description of cutworms, and I am otherwise unable to identify them. They look like a mealworm, but are much smaller and more elongated. Any insight would be greatly appreciated.
Well, I have to admit that I was stumped when I first got this email. Despite Matt sending excellent, crystal clear, journal-worthy photos of his little invaders, photos which we will post with this question of the week, they seemed similar to a couple of pests I knew, but they didn't quite fit the bill. The cutworms that Matt mentions, which are covered in depth in a previous question of the week in our archives, are caterpillars that also lurk underground and attack a variety of plants, including tomatoes. But they sever the young seedlings at the soil line. They don't bore into them. And while squash vine borers, another caterpillar pest covered in depth in another previous question of the week, do bore into plant stems, they only prey on squash, and only on types of squash whose vines are hollow, like zucchini and pumpkins. And squash vine borers tend to do their damage later in the season, when the plants are nice and big and the heartbreak of losing them is much more severe. And while, quote, worm is often erroneously used as part of the common name of many caterpillar pests, there are no real worms that damage plants, like the corn earworm, tomato hornworm, cabbage worm, cutworm, etc., Matt's worms didn't look like caterpillars. They seem more like a cross between an earthworm and a millipede. So it's a good thing that while I'm sitting there scratching my head, he persisted in sending the photos around until someone correctly identified the pest as a wireworm, the larval form of the click beetle, an unusual insect that when flipped on its back will right itself with a loud click. Then I remembered this pest from my time as editor of Organic Gardening magazine. Although the adult click beetle will do a little nibbling on plant leaves and flowers here and there, it isn't considered a serious garden pest. It's more of a delightful natural wonder for kids who discover the living click toys. But the wiry larval form can do serious damage, and to a surprisingly large variety of plants. Up to 1.5 inches long when fully grown, wireworms are shiny, segmented, leathery, and reddish-brown in color. They bore into all sorts of underground plant parts, including tubers, bulbs, corms, seedlings, roots, and the crowns of perennials. They're really serious on corn, potatoes, and gladiolas. The adult beetles, which are only 0.5 to 3/4 inches long, lay the eggs of the new generation in soil early in the spring, and the larvae hatch in about 1 week, making this prime baby wireworm time. Now, unlike the larval forms of most insects, these wireworms live in this juvenile stage for a long time, at least 2 or 3 years, and up to 6 years. They stay close to the surface when the soil is cool in the spring, but then they burrow down deep to avoid excessive heat in the summer and freezing cold over the winter. Wireworms are typically worse in new gardens that were previously lawns and/or gardens with drainage problems. Now, since they are so close to the surface right now, you can cultivate the soil to expose them to your tender mercies or those of birds. Allowing chickens access to your garden beds before you plant them for the season will rid you of wireworms, as well as cutworms and other soil-dwelling pests, and lots of weed seeds. It also feeds the chickens in the most natural way. Supernatural, in fact. The warmer your soil gets, the less risk that wireworms will be feeding. So delay your plantings as long as possible if these pests have been a problem, or if your garden was a lawn last year. If your soil drains poorly, lighten it up with double digging and or pearl light or a soil-free mix. These pests are much less likely to be a problem in raised beds, whose drainage is generally ideal. Finally, an old and popular trick is to trap them in cut potatoes and carrots buried a few inches deep in the soil a couple weeks before you put your plants out. Map these trap spots well, check the roots and tubers every few days, and destroy any wireworms you find infesting them. Beneficial nematodes watered into the soil may also help control these pests, as well as beetle grubs, flea larvae, and other nasty things that lurk just below the surface. Well, that sure was some interesting information about worms that wire and beetles what click, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To carefully review this week's edition, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to trap me with spuds if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live, put the actual subject in the subject line, and check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been John Knapp. Our webmaster is Baneful Rich Banowitz. His faithful internet companion is Sarah, not a she-devil, Kazar. Wiry Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our production assistant, Amanda No Relation McGrath, is clicking on all cylinders. Our editor, Al Banks, keeps a beetle-y beat. I'm Wormy Mike McGrath, and I'll barrow back to see you next week. The beautiful and ephemeral Lady Slipper Orchid is a true springtime star. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll take a close look at this Native American orchid, plus your fabulous phone calls.
Whether your passion is parsley, periwinkles, or peonies, Mike tacks a plethora of pertinent info for perfect plants in You Bet Your Garden at 11 Saturday mornings here on WHYY. Medford.